I think most people think that spiritual is somehow other than material. That there's our worldly life and our spiritual life. That the spiritual life maybe is a higher life, and the worldly life is more mundane and rooted. And that there's a kind of hierarchy, and that one wants to kind of move toward the spiritual if you're trying to become more human, let's say, and less held back by the material. I think there's a general feeling that spiritual is transcendent of the world, and in some ways perhaps even separate from it. But for me, there is no separation. Rudy would say, your physical life is your material, is your spiritual life. This is your spiritual life. And the more I sit and the more I expand in my awareness, the more I realize there is nothing separate from this. That you don't arrive at a place that is somehow free of the material. That it's all part of one exquisite whole. And there's a pervading feeling, I think, that if you attain the spiritual, you somehow move beyond the material realm, that you have become something more than human. Let's say you've become more loving, more conscious, more attuned to higher energies, which may be true, but in no way are they removed from the groundedness and the solidity and the material intensity of this world that we are inhabiting. I meet so many people on the journey who are trying to escape the world, escape the material, escape the tensions and the stresses and the demands and the suffering and the drama of human life, that want to walk around in a spiritual sense of expansion and kindness and well-being and, in some ways, free of suffering, free of the stuff that makes human life so hard. But my own journey has brought me to this place where it's all one thing. You might call the spiritual transcendent in that it is a larger envelope in which the material life manifests, but trust me, it plays profoundly and deeply into this material existence. There is nothing in this material world that isn't in some ways formed by, governed by, informed by the larger context in which we exist. Not everybody is conscious of that exquisite connection. Most of us live in a very, very shallow awareness of where we are, who we are, what we are, and what this world is. We live in such a superficial space that we can actually hold on to an idea that somehow, if we can escape into the spiritual, we can be liberated from the material. And that can't happen. You can't get out of here. There is no out of here. There's only here. And here is all that ever is, will be, could be, should be, happening exactly at this moment. This is the imprint of totality. This is what is. When I walk down the street, there is an awareness inside that is aware of and celebrates everything that is surrounding this body as it walks. There's an awareness of the sidewalk that is increasing daily, but it incorporates an awareness of the men who work to lay the paint, the cement. The time and effort that went into putting the ground beneath my feet, both the sidewalk and the earth itself. There is a sense of what was involved in creating the world we live in. Yes, it's past tense, but it is also immediate because it's here. There are a lot of past tenses that have evaporated, but yet they still somehow swirl in the environment that we inhabit. We are connected to all the construction and the building and the creation of the universe. It's who we are. It's what we are. When I walk down the street, my appreciation for every seed that grew, for every seed that didn't grow, for the struggle of every plant that's not getting the water it needs, for the struggle of life itself to happen, to manifest, to evolve, is so alive just walking down the street. I never saw it before. I used to walk down the street thinking. I wasn't even on the street. I wasn't even in the world. I don't know where I was. Brucey, Bruce, 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 all this stuff. I could actually conceivably walk through an entire life completely unaware of the universe I was in, which I suspect is true of most people. Never to see who you are, where you are, why you are, or that you are. It's a crazy situation to have come into this extraordinary state of being and be completely unaware of it, completely unconscious. The only thing that seems to come up is me, mine. Me, mine. Gimme. That's mine. I want. Why don't I have? All of that construct. And, you know, I watch it. I watch my grandchildren on the beach yesterday with other children and not understanding why they couldn't have what those kids had. They wanted their floating device, whatever. The thing they were floating in, a gummy bear. Inner tube. They wanted that one, not the one they had. Why can't they? Why do they start crying on the beach? Because I don't have. And you look at this thing forming at the age of two, and you go, wow, the misinformation, the construct of this separate individual is so powerful, and it so takes us away from what is. On the other hand, and I've been an apologist for this forever, we have to go through that. We have to go through it. You can't build the world without wanting something from it, without wanting to give, take, share, energize, create, dominate, frustrate, enjoy, hate. This world needs all that. It needs all that to be what it is. And so we participate in that. And then we go, I'm suffering. Oh my God, it's so hard. And then grief happens and loss and all these things. And you go, get me out of here. Get me out of here. And then you can't find a way out other than the traditional, you know, drugs and alcohol and sex or whatever it is you use to blind you to the world or whatever you use. But there's also the escape path of spirituality. That spirituality will lift you up and out. You can sit in a cave and you will no longer have to touch the suffering of mankind. And that's something that many people find desirable. Get me out of here. When I took LSD back in the 60s, I was blasted out of normalcy. I was blasted out of the world as I had constructed it around myself. Everything that was Bruce, everything that was me, mine, just evaporated into something much, much, much bigger that I could not comprehend at all. And I was so scared and so lost in the magnitude of how vast it all was and how insignificant this Bruce thing was, that I then spend the next 50 years trying to figure out what was that awareness that I had. What was that awareness? And I started to discover spirituality. And I started to find that there was a path to maybe being back in that vast open space, but that I could be there without fear, without apprehension, without loss. And I began this long journey of, you know, going to India and meeting teachers and finding so many people and then studying with Rudy and then doing this practice for so long, trying to get back to that. And then, as you've all heard the story, when I finally said, this isn't working after 45 years of sitting, suddenly, pop, I realized that getting back there was absurd, because back there was right here. This was that. I didn't realize it as an idea. It was like I had built a foundation of constructional materials that allowed me suddenly to see, aha, I have returned to the what is, and it's never been anywhere but here. And now every day I walk, or I sit, or I watch television, or I talk to you, and I'm aware of the magnitude of the gift of the infinite in the finite. I am aware that this is a living, pulsing, reverberating statement of, a configuration of that vastness. That's all this is. And we are in it. And we are in it and alive in it and blessed beyond belief to have come into some kind of actual awareness of what is. And most of us are complaining. Why is it so hard? Why is it so difficult? Why me, God? There's this incredible sense of sloth and laziness and self-pity and all of these stupid things that take over in the face of miraculous being. And how do you work beyond that? What does it mean for a human being to go beyond? How do you get there? Well, I'm going to talk what I always talk every 4 years. I'm going to talk the Olympics for a minute. Because we get to witness something in the Olympics that I think is really at the core of what you will call spiritual mastery, with the key word being mastery. How do you master this? Well, anyone who watches the Olympics for 2 minutes understands it doesn't happen by wishing and wanting. It happens by doing, and by doing with a level of discipline that I think all of us would be shamed by. It takes regular, daily practice of whatever your discipline is to get really good at it. Whether you get good enough to win the gold, silver, or bronze is somewhat beside the point, although it doesn't seem to be for them. But the reality is the discipline that makes you really good at something. Really good at it. And what happens when you get really good at it is a really interesting ride. And part of those rides involve winning, and part of those rides involve losing. And there's an ego component to both of those. When you win, you are exalted. When you lose, you're depressed. And you watch these Olympians talk about their journeys. And everybody wants the pinnacle. Everybody wants to reach this thing. But what's really interesting is all of this effort, all of this drive, arrives at a moment of triumph. One moment. Maybe if you're Michael Phelps, 23 moments, whatever. But you have your moments, and then they're over. They're over. And you walk around with what? I did it. I am this. Which starts to go into something called, I was this. And it starts to turn into a story rather than a reality. And you watch some of these people, and I'm going to talk Michael Phelps for a moment. He went on a real dark journey in the last 4 years, or 4 years ago, because he had gotten everything he wanted. And it wasn't enough. It didn't do it. He basically went, now who am I? Who am I without the drive, without the effort, without the goal? Who am I? Really interesting. He got really depressed, went to a very dark place. He describes it quite beautifully, I think. And then what he understood is he loved swimming. He loved it. And he needed to go back to it. He needed to once again touch that space, but this time to touch it consciously, with appreciation, with reverence, with gratitude. And he came back to the games, the game we're all in, really. And he came back, and he brought all of his mastery, and he also brought something else. He brought a number of things. One of them, I realized watching him, is enormous focus. But two, an enormous sense of play. He was enjoying it this time. And at the end of it all, the one thing he kept saying, because he did say it was the end, and now he understood it really does have finite nature. What's important? His little son, his fiance, his mom, his friends, the sweetness and the joy of what was always there. Well, maybe not the son and the fiance, but there's this sense. All of that mastery leads to one enormously simple thing, the appreciation of what is simple, the appreciation of having a life. And now a part of his life is truly over, but he has clearly learned how to live, what is important in life. That is the journey. That is the real journey. part of the ride we watch with all of these Olympians is what it means to get to a place called greatness. Try to apply that to what you're doing here. Try to apply it. What is greatness? What does it look like? I can only tell you it will also require discipline, practice, focus. In Rudy's words, sitting every day. Those guys don't skip a day, as far as I know. Or if they do, they make up for it the next day. These people are rigorous. They give up stuff. They have enormous, enormous appreciation for what they do. They know how hard it is, and they grow from the hardness of it. That is what is wanted here. I say that to you knowing that you probably don't conceive of yourself, any one of you, as Olympians on any level, Olympians of the spirit, Olympians of the formal principles of being human. But you all have it within you to be that. And if you want to be that, it takes discipline, effort over time, and a sense of play and gratitude and joy and a willingness to show up. This is not a casual or an occasional practice. I mean, it can be. Look, it's fine. You can all have this as an occasional thing. It's fine. But if you want the greatness that comes with waking up, feeling the exquisite lightness of enlightenment, being free of your burdens, if you want that, if you want to walk with a sense of true accomplishment in the world, in a sense there's work to be done. Now look, you may be one of these very lucky people who just realizes, who just goes, oh, I get it. That happens. But you're not going to be standing on any podium, which may be just fine. You don't need to stand on a podium. But if you really want what I think you're asking for by coming to a place like this, then do the work. Do the work. And by that, it's really about how much do you want this? How much do you want to walk down the street and be aware of everything that went into building that street and building every car and every street light? And I told my son the other day, I said, I want to hug every electrical pole because I can't believe what it means to have this light and energy being brought into every one of our homes that makes us warm, gives us food, gives us illumination every day, and none of us appreciate it. It's actually happening now for you. It happens now because somebody did the work. And the work they did is part of what you're here to do, whatever that may be, to serve the universe, to serve life, to give to life, to give love to the world, to give appreciation to the world. You don't have to do much more than that. Just an attitude of gratitude, of thank you, of awareness of what's gone into making all of this happen is so extraordinary. And to miss that is to have lived a life and missed what it was all about. In a way, we're here to become Olympians in our own life. It's not about recognition and podiums and medals. It's really about mastery. It's about mastering your own crazy mind that's distracting you from the truth of your existence. Finding a way to go into that mind that's walking around going, why me, and why didn't I get that, and going, whoa, stop it, quiet down, no, no, shh. Mastering your mind, it's called mastermind. Mastering your mind so it does not distract you from the wonder and the miracle of this. Because that's the only thing that stands between you and truth, is this stupid little mind that says, I want that inner tube. That's what I want to play with that. That's your problem. You can't have that inner tube. You can't have it. You got your own. Take the one you got. Figure it out. This is real spiritual practice. Real spiritual practice is living your life with an understanding that it has profound depth, enormous history, cosmological encompassment. It is so big and so vast and so ancient and so remarkable, and every bit of whatever was is here now in you, in your body, in your mind, in your genes, in your being. You are its current manifestation. This is a remarkable truth. It is remarkable. And if you don't know it's remarkable, you're missing it. You're missing it. Don't walk through the day and not take one breath and go, oh my God, look at this. And I say that because everything you're looking at is for you. It's happening for you. It may be happening for them, but it's happening for you. This is your gift, called life. You got it. You've got it. It's yours right now. It's temporary. It has very limited duration, and it will be gone. Who knows what happens at that point? We've got lots of stories we tell ourselves. You can think about that all you want, but the reality is, right now, you're here. This is it, and it's a miracle. Master it. Live it well. Enjoy it. This is your spiritual life. Every minute. Any questions?
I had questions, and I think you kind of answered them all, so maybe I'll just repeat them if you find them. The question I was going to ask is, as I sit, I'm getting better at sitting still by no means any length of time, but I notice the mind still goes what I call to the store of thinking about the appointment or whatever. And in a way it seems asinine and stupid, you know? In a way it's like, why do I go there? You know, I'm here to be present in every moment of my day too, but you know, especially here, I guess, too. And is it malevolent, or is it just doesn't know, you know, and goes...
Sloppy.
Sloppy.
Sloppy, lazy. Not controlled. It's really funny, because you don't have to control it. You just have to go, okay. You let it go off and do its thing. But what you do is you relax and watch it. You don't even have to watch it. You can just let it be. But you don't have to get caught or identify with it. The laziness is giving it power to excite you, control you, to distract you. It's such a process that we go through every day. Endless involvement with the mind that keeps us entertained, really. And at entertainment, as much as it's a stupid entertainment, it's like the worst movie ever, you know, is going along in your head all the time. And you're caught in this thing. And the way you get uncaught is to stop doing it. Now you can try all these practices, double breath exercises, mantras, you know, any kind of, you know, conscious expansion process that you want to deal with, mindfulness meditation. It's all part of seeing this stuff and letting it happen without your being pulled into it. And you slowly start to get back and you realize there's something watching all this. What is it that's watching this? That's the key. Who is the observer here? Who is the witness? Because that's who you are. And that witness is not caught. That witness can give itself over and get caught, but it can also step back. And if it has that power, what is that? How do I free myself of that endless involvement in the bullshit of day-to-day life? And you can do it, but it takes a real discipline. And if you don't do the discipline, you're not going to figure it out. You can't get across the pool in, you know, in 26 seconds or whatever it is without discipline. You just can't. You know, you can try, you know, but most of us will take four times, five times longer than that, or not even get across the pool, or even get in the pool. So what do? It takes commitment and saying, I'm going to do this, and you really want to do it. Is there a reason for that? Well, I'll tell you, unconscious, superficial, suffering life is horrible. The fact that most people live there does not excuse it from being horrible. And you have a capacity to move beyond that. You have a capacity to go, enough. I see where that goes. It doesn't go anywhere I want to be, and yet it's the only place I'm headed. So you stop it. But if you don't stop it and you go, well, tomorrow, I'll do it tomorrow, or not today, I've got other things to do. If those Olympians, sorry to keep referring to that, but if those Olympians said that, I can't practice today, I got a lunch with somebody, or I got to do this, or I got to do that, where's the game? They're not in it. They're not in it. If you want to be in this game, then you have to do the work and you have to follow the discipline. You may not want to do that. That's fine. 99.99% of the population does not want to do that. And watch the news and look outside and see where that leads. You know, mostly it's like you get by, it's okay, you know, life's okay. But then maybe there will be some existential moment somewhere in your 50th, 60th, 70th year that go, what was this? What is this? Because once you, like Michael Phelps, are done with your career, once all that stuff is done and you've got what you're going to get, and then you go, well, then now who am I? It's late in the game to figure it out. Who am I? And there's not a lot of muscle. There's not a lot of discipline. There's not a lot of capacity. So a lot of people just end up in this really uncomfortable state of being and then dead. It doesn't have to be like that. It truly doesn't, if you want to take responsibility. Just showing up here is a signal to me, and I think a signal to yourself, that you want something. But how much do you want it, and what are you willing to put out for it? That's all I can tell you. I am grateful for all of the years I sat. I sat every day. And I mean, I directed movies, I wrote movies, I traveled, I did all sorts of stuff, but I sat. I raised two, with my wife, Blanche, and I raised two children. We sat every day. We just did this. It was a real discipline. And what did that produce? Well, I don't know. I mean, you guys can be the judge of that. But I am definitely, totally committed to this unbelievable ride and awareness that comes with it. It is an extraordinary place to wake up to. I wake up in the day and I go, I've never been this happy. I've never been this conscious. Or I've some days, you know, my recent talks, you may be aware of, I've been some real unhappiness, you know, some real grief experiences have happened. And I've never experienced grief like that. But I'm watching what it is. I am learning and learning and learning. And it's an extraordinary ride, really extraordinary.
I can really actually relate to the gratitude of walking. I think the history of the sidewalk just seems silly, but I don't know. But I also, what really kind of hit home is walking around in your head, and that it can and does happen for your whole life and stuff.
It's most lives. I almost everyone I know outside of this practice is caught. And they are caught in a cyclical movement of superficial stuff. They are angry at people, they're suffering, they're blaming, they're unhappy. There's all of this stuff going on. You know, they want that 400th ice cream cone, whatever the things are that keep them going day by day by day. But it's the way the world works, and it's always been the way the world works. I think Buddha said something like, two in a million will wake up. you know, everyone else is going to be asleep. They're going to be asleep, walking through this, sleepwalking. That's what you usually see. If you're awake in the middle of all that, you're going to be kind of lonely, because you're going to be talking to people who are kind of, you know, you're looking at them like, what? But you realize you can start to actually interact with them and connect to certain underpinnings that are actually awake because they're alive. They don't know it, but you can feed into that and actually help them get a little happier, mostly by being present with them. Just being present is an energy exchange. It's very powerful and really important. And if you can do that for people, then you bring something extra into the environment. And that's worth doing. But what about you? What about you? You know? And the whole weird thing of all this is, in the end, if you get really happy and really satisfied and accomplished and you have a really big life, you know, that's only part of the work. Because then you got to let go of that. And this teaches that as well. You can have and let go simultaneously. You can have everything, but don't own one-tenth of it. Don't own any of it. Let it come, let it go. It is what it is. The universe, when you no longer are owning or possessing for yourself, it's kind of all yours. It's all yours. And extraordinary. I mean, you can't move into somebody else's house, but you can live in your house and realize how fulfilling it is, how it has enough. You know, it's not hard to get a house that has enough. I always tell people, you know, you get your sink and your refrigerator and your TV, and you kind of in a bed, and you have enough. You know, I mean, we are very lucky people, and we are all in America given more than that. So, finding your way into this exquisite sense of who you are and where you are is the ride we're on, but you don't get there casually. You don't get anywhere casually, ever. It's always the extraordinary that gets you there. The ordinary is the ordinary. We all do the ordinary. But the extraordinary is what builds an amazing life. And that's what we're all working on, I think.
And also it's good to hear, and I need to hear that, just so I remember that I can do it. Because I can notice that my mind goes and I get caught up so much that I can do it.
Of course you can do it. We wouldn't be talking here if it was impossible. The craziness is, it's not only is it possible, it's not that hard. It's just nobody does it. Not nobody, but many people don't do it. You know, and now there's all these symposiums for all these corporate America places, you know, that, you know, teaching people mindfulness so that they can function better in the world. Well, it works. It really works. It's just, it's not the end goal. If anything, the end goal is to be aware of the witness to all of this and realizing that that witness is a rather remarkable reality. It's who you are. You're not the thing it's witnessing. You're the witness itself. It's a great, great awareness. And we all have that capacity. Not to do it is, in basically, in the end, to have wasted a ride. And I mean, look, I don't want to create, you know, tensions and more suffering and drama, but you don't want to waste this. You really don't. It's so precious. And to waste it is like, wow. Wow. It's like being a whole big banquet in front of you and you eat the bag of pretzels. You know, what's that? Why would you do that? And people do. You know?
It seems to me that at the core of what you teach is that we basically find our own way somehow. We find our own connection, and that it's not prescribed program.
Exactly.
If you follow Rudy's rules, then you'll get there.
Yeah, no, that is the teaching. It's not just my teaching. I think it's most teachers will teach you, all we can do is inspire you to be on your own path, because there is no other path. My path will not be your path. All I can do is tell you I got somewhere that you can get to, but not through my path, through your path. And it's unfolding in front of you every day. You wake up in the morning in your room, not my room. You know, you have to deal with the people you knew in your life, not the people I knew, and you have to figure it out. It's up to you. But hopefully this can inspire you to do it. I mean, again, the Olympians, you know, each one had a different story. each one of them had unbelievable stories, and those stories are very compelling. And NBC goes out of their way to make them, you know, really emotional and dramatic. But they're real stories of people against all odds who achieve something. Of course, that's not the end of the story, because some of them achieve something, and then now what? They can't even get a job. You know, what is that? That's a great lesson. You know, there's life goes on beyond your achievements. You know, I'm in Hollywood, you know, I come from Hollywood. You know, all these guys have had these movies made and all these careers, and then it's over. It's over. Some of them luckily made enough money to survive, but there are people sometimes who don't. Then what do? When that story is finished, and believe me, all of our stories are going to be finished. You know, my grandchildren are growing up. I'm still going to be a grandpa, but it's not going to be like the story I'm identifying with right now, which is hands-on active. It'll be something else. And I have to be able to move on to the next part of that story. We all do. We all have stories. The basic thing to understand is you are not the story. Step back. Watch it. You are, if you're a story, you're the story of humanity itself. That's your story. Everyone in it is part of your story. And your little focus on you is a big limitation in understanding the story. So it's your path, and find it.
So then the role of the teacher is more like a coach in terms of... Like,
absolutely. Inspirational teaching. Get to work. Do the thing.
So ultimately, we find our own work. I mean, you could tell me to go out and run every day, but I might actually discover that I'm better off walking fast.
Yeah, that exactly. Or swimming, or lying around looking at the sunlight, you know, looking up at the sky. There's some people... You know, I know people in my life who are, don't stop moving. I would encourage them to lie down, take a look. Everybody's got their own way to do it. Here's the important thing. Yes, the teacher is, quote unquote, inspirational on some level, but the real guidance, the real thing that really tells you what to do is inside. And I can help you go there. I can direct you to those spaces, these chakra spaces, the heart, the mind, the gut. These spaces are directive, and they know what they're doing if you listen to them, especially in concert with each other, so you don't just have a gut telling you what to do, or a heart telling you what to do, or a mind telling you what to do. That can get complicated, you know, the mind figuring it out, the emotions of love, the thing that wants to go in and control the world, those are complicated. But when they all align up and they all start to reveal what they know, they will guide you. They have unbelievable directive. They know what to do. There's a guidance system inside everybody. And when you go deep enough to hear it, you'll listen to it. Most of us hear it occasionally, like we hear it as conscience or something, little flicker of something. But it's really broadcasting in a big, broadband way, and you can just go right down and go, this or that. Do I do this? Do I do that? And most of the time it'll say, follow, take another step. Just take a next step. Follow your heart. You know, what does it say? It doesn't matter. It says that a lot to me. It doesn't matter. Go this way, go that way, it won't matter. And every so often it goes this way, this way. Really interesting. And trust me, when it says this way, I turn right. I go. Because that's the lesson I've learned over the course of time. It's served me very well. These voices know. They are informed by the infinite vastness and history of the universe. They really know what to do.
So my next question would be, in terms of having this focus to actually, you know, go into the center of your chakras and connect them and make that thing happen, I've noticed... When I work with you, the second your eyes contact mine, it's a lot easier to do it. I mean, I can be all over the place, and then I'm exaggerating that point.
No, but that's why this why this class exists. Why I study with Rudy? He would give me, as he put it, his energy. He said, "Give me your shit, and I'll turn it into something else." Hmm. But here's the energy, and he would put this energy into me, and he would clean out my system. And he was like a roto-rooter, you know, he just took stuff and turned it around for me, gave me back something clean. You know, he cleaned it out. And it was really valuable. And so we do that here. It's a unique kind of work. Is it the only work? No, there's lots of different kinds of work. But this work is very effective, or I wouldn't still be doing it. So you just work and you work your system until you get to the point where you're in charge of it and you don't need a teacher to do it for you. Or help do it for you. Okay.
You talked a lot about, you know, doing the work, but in the end it's letting go of it, kind of, or letting go of something. And I'm really keen on the mastery, you know, mastering life, mastering, and letting go of the, you know, the craziness. But I think in my life I've kind of let go of doing that, you know, or let go of discipline, you know, maybe trying to reach enlightenment that way or trying to reach peace that way. If we don't apply ourselves, do we slide into, you know, not being able to be present?
Well, each story is its own story, but probably that's probably the problem that occurs. You know, it's either doing the work or being worked. Being worked is somewhat better. You know, being worked is when you hand yourself over to the work and it's just, it's happening. You know, as a writer, there are times I'm struggling to get it and put it on paper and make it work. Then there are times it just flows through and I'm being worked. You know, I'm taking down dictation. I live for those moments because that's really the best thing that can happen. But the fact is, some days it happens and some days it doesn't. When it doesn't happen, I don't just sit around moping. I just do the work. And then when I'm being worked, I'm still there and available to take it down. And that's really valuable, you know, because you're always in play, you're always in process, rather than sitting around, you know, couch potatoing in the world, you know, which is fine. The world doesn't care. Nothing really cares. You can do it, you know. It's just a limited ride. There's nothing wrong with any of this. Trust me, it's all part of the great oneness. And so there's a lot of couch potatoes out there who the world seems to want to have, you know, or they wouldn't be there. So enjoy being a couch potato if you want. But you'll never be an Olympian as a couch potato. You'll be sitting watching guys and going, wow, how do they do that? Wow. But appreciators are almost as important as the doers that are being appreciated. So it's all part of a big construct. It's just, where do you want to be in the scheme of things? Also, being a couch potato, you put on weight, you end up with health problems, you end up uncomfortable, you start to wish you were something different but can't get there, then you put yourself down, then you're on this horrible, horrible ride of, you know, of being unhappy and miserable. That's not wanted. You don't have to do that. This is an alternative to that, if you want it. And if you don't want it, God bless. Enjoy the TV.
You've talked about that personally for you, the moment of enlightenment came when you said, I give up, right?
Right. But following 46 years of daily sitting. So if you give up on day two, that's a very different experience. Really, it just doesn't work in the same way. You know, you gotta do the work to go beyond it. And so if you're trying to have a free ride, good luck. I mean, it happens. It happens. But are you going to be the one? Maybe. Maybe.
Phelps had fun this Olympics.
He did.
Because he'd gone through all that.
Yeah.
And the personal inward journey.
Yes, he did it all. And it's still, he's 31 or something, so he's got a lot more life to live, and is going to have all the stories that we have. And it's clearly not over for anybody. You know, it's not over till it's over, but you got to be in a place where you can take those lessons and really make them into something remarkable. It's a real problem for people who peak early. A lot of people peak in high school, you know, and their whole life is looking backwards. That's not kind of what you want. You also don't want your whole life to be looking way in the future. You want them to all somehow come together at some point into present tense awareness. And then you realize past and future are one thing, and they're right here. And that is, it's a vast expansion of the moment into infinity. And that's a great thing. So, you know, how many people want this? I don't know. A few people. You know, I'll sit here every week hoping to connect with whoever that is.
I think most of my life I have focused on the big picture of things, so I like would think about who made the cement and who made the food or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it felt like I was being heady, and I wasn't.
Yeah, it can definitely.
It could take me out of like the actual tasting of the food, rather than thinking about all the things that went into the food.
Yes. And that can happen,
and also like the work I chose is like a big picture thing. It's like trying to see how all the parts play. So there's something that I think I'm drawn to do that, and yet. Yes.
I was never drawn to that exactly, but I will tell you the discovery of it in a non-intellectual way, in a kind of like, oh my God, this whole material world was built by people who came before me for me. It was not my reaching for it, it was my just walking. And the walking and the openness that accommodated that or accompanied it, presented that, and it just came flooding in with a sense of near teary-eyed bliss and joy and thank you. I mean, I literally wanted to hug an electrical pole yesterday. My son had to go look at it. You know, it was that stupid, but it's really what I felt like, and I was in tears thinking about electricity. And I wasn't thinking about it, I was aware of it. And like, so I get it. I've tried the emotional, I've tried the gut stuff. All of these things try to happen in a way to get us somewhere that we're trying to get to that's usually projected by the mind. And we can't get there because there's a you that's trying to get there. And I've said this 400 million times. What has to happen is for that you to disappear so you can realize you are there. That's the whole, you are there. Getting there is crazy. You are there. So intellectually and everything else, trying to understand it and make it work, all of that knowledge base is available without anybody knowing it. There's just a kind of like, ah, I am that. And it's extraordinary to witness.
So sometimes that happens spontaneously to me, and so I think that may be similar to what you're talking about. The other day I was walking up a hill, and I thought about how temporary it was. Like, it was beautiful, and yet knowing, like, 100 years from now or 50 years or something, I mean, there'll be an earthquake and all these homes are going to be gone and the tree is going to be gone. And so there was a bittersweet moment of appreciating that.
Absolutely.
And
That's reality.
That is reality, yeah.
That's reality, the poignancy.
Yeah. And it lasted, I don't know, 20 seconds or a minute or however long it did, and then it goes away.
Yeah, well, kind of. It's timeless in one level. And when you're in the world of time, you know, minutes moving along, then it gets, you're thinking of it as for 10 seconds or 10 minutes. But those revelations are big, and they sort of permeate the system, and you actually are expanded by them. They feed in a way that keeps it's beyond knowledge. It's a kind of knowing. That knowing is what's building inside you. That's what's going to burst out completely past all of the understanding and the intellectualizing. You will become the knowing. You already are the knowing. It's happening as we speak. It's just cracking out of you. It's breaking apart. And it's a beautiful thing to watch. And I see how it works. I learned from watching you, because, you know, you are a serious player in this game. You know, you are fully intended. I mean, if I was an Olympic coach, I would put you in the game. I would say, this person's serious. You know, those coaches have to look at everybody and make those judgments. And a lot of people just on the borderline. You're not on the borderline. You're in the game. That's very valuable. Keep it going. Just keep it going. It will play itself out. Yes. Anybody who wants to leave, just go.
Uh-huh. Electrical poles, it reminded me of something that's very kind of apropos in the 12-step. In the AA book, it talks about kind of introducing people to higher power, like for atheists or agnostics and stuff. And it talks about that when you turn a light switch on, you really don't know what's going on. But you know, if you do the work, if you turn the light switch on, and all the people that have done the work in that generation. But in me, if you turn the light switch on, the lights were gone. And I guess with us, if we do the work, the promise is that the lights will go on.
Absolutely. None of this is tricky. I think it may look tricky, but it's rather simple. You know, just sit quietly, pay attention to these amazing energy centers if you want, or just walk around through life saying, please help me, or just walk around looking, whatever it takes. I mean, there's no real formula. There's just showing up and letting whatever this thing is that's part of our existence know how serious we are about our wanting to love and appreciate and know what we are and who we are. And it delivers. It just delivers. Why would it not? You know, again, I've used this example before, but if you have a little kid who's going, I want that ice cream, I want the ice cream, I want the ice cream, you're going to give him the ice cream. You are. There's no way not to, especially if they cry and do all that stuff. You know, they do. You, what can you do? That's the role.
Yeah.
And the universe will take care of us that way. But you got to let them know you want the ice cream.
I guess when that happens for me, I do the self-inquiry and ask, well, who wants the ice cream? And then it kind of sweeps out the it's not here now kind of experience.
Self-inquiry is very valuable. It's a wonderful tool in this game to be able to ask those questions, you know. But that takes consciousness. It means you have enough of a remove to not just immediately go, I want that ice cream, I have to have the ice cream. You go, well, who wants that? And why? You know, that means you're suddenly denying yourself the pleasure of the desire and the fulfillment of that desire because of something you want. There's something higher. That you want the knowledge that comes beyond the desire. That's spiritual work. That's getting past just giving yourself everything you want or feeding your noisy brain to keep it distracted. And that's in self-inquiry is valuable. On the other hand, just so you know, a lot of it is up here. And this is one chakra. There's a lot of other spaces, and not everybody goes to those spaces, but I think the integration of all of these centers is really helpful from my perspective. Okay. Thank you, guys. We're done. No class. Next week will be... Next week is... we're Big Indian. The week after that... we're going to be in London. The week after that, we're going to be in Los Angeles. So there's no class here for 3 weeks. So next class is in 4 weeks. Okay? And we'll send out a note to that effect. Thank you.